Okay, welcome everyone to the Planning and Development Committee meeting, and we'll start with new business. Councilor Zwart, any new business?
No new business.
Mayor Foster?
Chair, I do not have.
Okay, Councilor Anderson?
I do not have any, sir.
Councilor Hooper?
Nothing here, sir.
Councilor Jones?
Nothing tonight.
All right. And motion to adopt the agenda. Councilor Zwart, seconded by Councilor Hooper. All in favor? That's carried. Any declarations? Seeing none. Announcements? Councilor Anderson?
No announcements.
Okay. Councilor Hooper?
No announcements.
Okay. Councilor Jones?
No announcements.
Over to you, Councilor Zwart.
No announcements.
Mayor Foster?
Well, I thought Councilor Hooper was going to get it. We had the tackle and, it's not a fish swap, it's a tackle and something swap. So the fish show in, they don't swap fish. I just want to get that out there. But I got to tell you, year after year, that thing keeps getting bigger and bigger. It is absolutely amazing how much of the school they're taking over. So, you know, anyone that's into fishing, they had people drive down from Ottawa because the deals were so good at the Bowmanville show. So kudos to the organizers.
Okay, thank you. All right, and adoption of the minutes from the previous meeting. Moved by Councilor Anderson, second by Councilor Jones. Comments or questions? All in favor? That's carried. We have an introduction. Michael, do you want to take that over?
As is tradition in introducing new staff, I'm going to introduce Andrew Payne, who is here if you'd like to stand up. There he is, okay. Andrew Payne joined the Planning Services Department in February on a 5-month contract. Andrew will be working with our Zone Clarington team in completing background research and drafting the rural section of the new zoning bylaw for the municipality. Andrew is a recent graduate of the University of Guelph, Master of Science in Rural Planning and Development, with a previous degree in Environmental Governance, also from the University of Guelph. So welcome, Andrew.
Okay, so now we have a public meeting, and this is a public meeting concerning a draft plan of subdivision and a subdivision zoning bylaw amendment. And the purpose is to hear public comments. General information on the public meetings is available on the chairs. And if a person or a public body does not make oral submission at this public meeting or make written submissions to the municipality of Clarington before council makes a decision with respect to the proposed application for the draft plan of subdivision and the zoning bylaw amendment, the person may not be entitled to appeal the decision to the local planning appeal tribunal, and the person or public body may not be added as a party to the hearing of an appeal before the local planning appeal tribunal, unless in the opinion of the tribunal there are reasonable grounds to add the person or public body as a party. So the meeting will proceed as follows. Staff will provide a short presentation explaining the proposal. Residents or other members of the public will then be invited one by one to offer any comments. Before doing so, please state your name. Following your presentation, please enter your name and mailing address, including postal code, on the interested parties list located on the podium. Please be advised that your personal information is collected under the authority of the Planning Act and will be used during the review process. Questions about the collection of personal information can be directed to the municipal clerk. So the order in which you'll be asked to address committee will be all opposed or concerned about the proposal first, followed by anyone wishing to provide comment or support. The applicant or agent will be last. So the public meeting is regarding applications submitted by Aspen Gardens Limited, which is Caitlin, to permit a 136-unit plan of subdivision consisting of 21 single-detached dwellings, 6 semi-detached dwellings for a total of 12 units, and a townhouse block of up to 103 condominium units, an open space block, and the extension of Buttonshaw Street to Green Road. The rezoning application proposes to place these lands in appropriate zones to permit the requested development. The file numbers are SC 2018-0001 and ZBA 2018-0027. And the staff presentation will be made by Ann Taylor Scott.
Thank you, and good evening, Mr. Chair, Mayor, members of Council, fellow staff, and members of the public. This is a public meeting to consider applications by Aspen Gardens Limited, or Caitlin, on a 4-hectare parcel at the northwest corner of Baseline Road and Green Road in Bowmanville. The proposed draft plan of subdivision would create 136 residential units, consisting of 21 single detached dwellings, 6 semi-detached dwellings for 12 units, and a townhouse block of up to 103 condominium units. The plan also includes an open space block, the extension of Buttonshaw Street to Green Road. The rezoning application proposes to place these lands in appropriate zones to permit the requested residential development. The slide above is the proposed draft plan overlaid onto an aerial photo. The proposed extension of Buttonshaw Street is highlighted in red, and this road alignment also serves as a stormwater servicing corridor for the subdivision to the northwest, which is SC 2014-0002. And these lands are currently being prepared for development. The open space block is highlighted in green, and the 21 single detached units are highlighted in the aqua blue color. There are 6 semi-detached units for a total of 12 dwelling units shown in yellow. And the orange block right at the intersection is a proposed condo townhouse block for up to 103 townhouse units. These would be a mix of units with front doors onto green or baseline with vehicular access to the rear, and a number of the blocks on the interior are the back-to-back style of townhouse units. Surrounding land uses to the north and the east are existing residential dwellings and plans of subdivision. To the south on Baseline Road are lots of record, including a residence on the south side of Baseline Road, and lands designated urban residential and environmental protection. To the west is an open space block acquired as part of a draft approved plan of subdivision referenced previously, SC 2014-0002. The subject lands are currently vacant, and there are significant variations in grades across the site. The applicant's plan is to regrade the land to accommodate servicing and residential development. The lands are designated urban residential, with a portion of the lands to the west designated environmental protection. The policies of the official plan would permit limited apartments, townhouses, single detached and semi-detached units up to 3 stories in height at this location. The applicant hosted a public information center on February 28th. A total of 5 area residents attended this public information center. Generally, staff did not hear significant concerns or objections at the PIC, and residents were pleased to see a proposed road connection to Green Road. A total of 8 individuals have registered as interested parties, and concerns raised to date relate to construction impacts, increased traffic along Green Road, pedestrian safety, unit design, overcrowding at local schools, and alterations of grades and impacts to the Drumlin. The application and supporting studies were circulated to staff and agencies for comments, and we're still awaiting for a number of comments from agencies, including the Conservation Authority and the Region of Durham. The proposal will require revisions to address staff and agency concerns, and there are a number of issues to resolve. The staff report identifies 4 major items, which include grading, density and built form, site design, and protection of the natural features. The applicant will be required to provide further analysis of grading and site alteration for the site. The design of the site and buildings must be sensitive to existing grading and the unique topography of the Drumlin. It must minimize the amount of fill either entering or leaving the site, and must also reduce the amount and height of retaining walls, as preliminary plans show retaining walls up to 10 meters high or 30 feet in some sections. The plan will be reviewed to ensure the appropriate mix and distribution of lot sizes and unit types, and that site design complies with the OP official plan direction to limit townhouse block sizes to 50 units per block. Finally, the applicant's consultant will be required to appropriately delineate the natural heritage features and providing adequate buffers as required by the official plan. In summary, the purpose of tonight's meeting is to provide an opportunity for the public to provide comments on the applications, and it is respectfully recommended that the comments received from residents this evening be considered during review of the application and that staff prepare a subsequent report upon resolution of the issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone present who wishes to speak in opposition to? Come forward, please, sir. Welcome, and
thank you.
Please state your name. And
John Colville, and I'm representing both myself and my father, William. And good evening. I've prepared a little bit of concerns here, and I guess we'll go backtrack slightly to the previous owner prior to Caitlin acquiring the property. It had been hoped at that point that the previous owner was at one time considering putting a development in of himself, and it was actually only to comprise of 2-acre estate lots, which would have blended beautifully into the surrounding feature and minimalized any grading or disturbance within the that boundary. However, where my concern is lying right now is, first of all, it's the aesthetics of this proposal. It appears to me that this is a total detraction from the surrounding areas and properties, which are mostly single-family dwellings, both to the north, east, and to the north, eventually to the northwest as well. 103 units of townhouses, that's kind of stretching it a little far as I'm concerned. And I look back, an original reference that I had was a draft plan that was made way back in 1996, showing that subject property at that time, as it was originally proposed, comprised only of single dwelling housing units. The other concerns are going to be obviously noise and traffic in the area. Putting in the eventuality where these 103 units are going to be, parking is going to be at a premium. Most of these families that will be moving in are going to be multi-vehicle families. And judging by the way that the streets are going to be lined out, one big concern is the availability of being able to get emergency vehicles or service vehicles through that area if it's clogged up with vehicular traffic parked out on the roads. And that will be a reality. The density to me is, nowadays we're trying to reduce the carbon footprint, and yet this is, again, opening it up to a much larger footprint than what was originally proposed. And I'm going to make a brief reference here to the housing policy that was printed on, this was an updated version of the municipal official plan, and this was dated January 2007. But what caught my eye was the policy 6.3.2. Now, a brief outline is that this plan seeks to achieve the following mix of the housing types within each of the urban communities of Curtis, Boltonville, and Newcastle Village. Table S1 has a target of 70% of detached and semi-detached and similar housing forms. 20% allotted allocated to town housing with up apartment and similar housing forms, and the remaining 10% were apartments. Now, I did a little bit of math on this, and all the numbers are reversed. I calculated that these units, the townhouse units, are going to comprise of nearly 75% of that total area capacity. It in fact inverts and runs contradictory to the town policy. Again, vehicular traffic is going to be a concern. There's going to be a lot more vehicles. We're finding now that on the baseline road, that the traffic is getting heavier and heavier. The road is getting chewed up quite considerably, and especially out around my area, between 2300 Baseline Road and West, there's a significant drop in the road now occurring. And at night when trucks, cars are going through, you can hear them, some of them are actually bottoming out as they're going over it. So it's putting an awful strain on some of the area, existing area of roads as well. And with that extra amount of people, we're going to get a lot more of it happening. I can't add too much more to that. I intend to eventually submit a written request or statement to the planning department in the near future. Thank you.
Okay. There may be questions for you, sir. So are there any questions from members of council? Mayor Foster.
Thank you. Thank you for coming. And Mr. Colville, thank you for joining us this evening. The open space, so I know that your dad in particular had real concerns with the Drumlin. Did we at least get that part right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Space? Okay, good. I just wanted to...
Yeah, I think a lot of the concern was that the grading of the Drumlin as well. That it was a very significant concern because, well, for those of you who are not aware of the significance of that Drumlin, this is actually... That Drumlin is actually the highest point of land within a mile of the Lake Ontario, current Lake Ontario shore, and that's on either shore of Lake Ontario. It is actually the highest point. And my feeling is that disturbing it or basically tearing it down is kind of, I don't know. The open space has been declared an environmentally sensitive area, and for the life of me, I still cannot understand why the Drumlin was zoned the way it was when it was zoned back in the 1990s. It just sort of doesn't make a lot of sense.
Okay, but so I'm clear. Most of that is captured with the open space,
mm-hmm.
And this is a good thing. Yes,
the open space is a good thing.
Okay.
It would have been better if, that open space had been a little more open and also took in the Drumlins. But because over Dodds, Wollinger, Bottrell, there used to be significant Drumlins there, and they're gone. It's just flat land and nothing but a sea of rooftops, really.
All right, thank you.
Okay, and sir, your house is where?
2300 Baseline Road, it's at the, where you see at the lower left-hand corner, there's a group of four bungalows there on the north side, the bungalow where it comes down and makes sort of like a little jog, there's a creek nearby.
Okay, thank you very much. And I guess you've signed the sheet. Okay, thank you, sir. Okay, is there anyone else that wishes to speak in opposition to or has concerns with the application? All right, and is there anyone that wishes to, any member of the public wishes to speak in support of the application? Okay, and does the applicant or agent wish to speak? Come forward, please.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak this evening. My name is Michael Fry. I am a land use planner with DG Biddle & Associates, and we're acting on behalf of the owners of the property. I just wanted to bring up a couple of items that that have been spoken to briefly about the proposal itself. We're looking at a development within the urban boundary at a density that's approximately 41 units per hectare, and I think that the because of the direction of the province, densities of 41 units per hectare is in line with what the expectations are, not just in the local official plan, but also the regional official plan, the provincial policy statement, and the growth plan. Baseline Road is a type A arterial, and I understand Green Road is a type B arterial, so that the medium density block in this location is appropriate. I have reviewed the traffic impact study that was prepared for this development, which also speaks to the medium density block, and it states very clearly that the expectations with regards to traffic generated by this site can be handled by the existing road network and by the intersections that surround the site. And from a traffic perspective, the traffic consultant had no general concerns. And I don't believe that there's anything else that we would like to bring to your attention other than we're continuing to work with staff with regards to the zoning bylaw amendment and, of course, the draft plan of subdivision. And we will continue to work and resolve the items that Ms. Taylor Scott brought up earlier. Thank you.
Questions from council? Mayor Foster.
Thank you, Mr. Fry. Thank you. So we heard, I think it was 10-meter retaining walls, which have to be worked on. Is that correct?
Through you, Mr. Chair, yes. There are retaining walls to the west side of the property that are proposed. Those retaining walls are in the range of, I believe, 6 to 8.5, 9 meters. And those are required in order to hold up the drumlin. The drumlin to the west of the property has been identified by previous council as an important feature, though not identified in the official plan. The green space that is associated with the creek at the bottom of the valley on the property to the west, that green space, that natural heritage system, does extend into this property.
So my concern would be the walls, and I'm sure engineering is going to have something to say about this, but typically, you know, 20, 30 years later, the walls fail. And typically, we get a phone call to fix the walls. Will you have something in place to, A, make it abundantly clear? So if the townhouses are a condo corp, that's one thing. If we're looking at the individual residents, that the people buying these understand completely, clearly, you know, crystal clear that when they fail, and they do, you know, that the municipality is not going to come to their rescue.
Yes.
Can you tell that I've had to deal with this several times?
Yes, absolutely. And that's an excellent point. Thank you. The townhouse development is proposed to be developed as a condominium. And as a condominium, the condominium corporation would be responsible for the maintenance of that feature. And that maintenance is in perpetuity. There would be no expectation from the municipality to provide any sort of maintenance on that.
So I'm looking a little further north. You've got a single detached. Would they have retaining walls up there as well? Do you know offhand?
Yes, through you, Mr. Chair. They definitely have retaining walls, certainly not to the same magnitude. I believe that those are in the range of 1.5 to 2 meters, but I would have to check that and verify that.
So I'd still have the same request, and I'm sure staff are listening, that it's made abundantly clear to the owners. So that whoever is around 20 years from now isn't getting the same phone calls that we get. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Councilor Hooper?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Pride, for coming forward tonight. In regards to the product that's going to be in the bottom part of the photo up there, will that be similar to what's up further on up in the development to the north?
Through you, Mr. Chair, the proposal currently is all grade-related townhouse product, and several of those are back-to-back, which means that there's only a front door and a front garage with the units backing onto each other, as well as two blocks of units, which would have a front door which faces out onto Green Road and Baseline, and those would have garages in the back. So those would be the types of units, and we're looking at 3 stories as a maximum height. They certainly wouldn't be stacked. So there are a number of there's a variety of developments, variety of building stock in the Aspen Ridge neighborhood to the north, closer to the railway tracks, that include stacked townhouses and apartments and grade-related townhouses. These would be closer to the grade-related townhouses.
And those, if I'm through the chair, those have a grading issue in regards to the way they step up there too as well, correct?
That I'm not aware of, no.
Okay. Okay, and you heard the one resident speaking about the original plan about estate homes or estate lots or bigger homes. Was there any thought given to that when they developed the land?
Through you, Mr. Chair, the intent here was to look at density targets that are current. Those would be the current density targets in the growth plan, which would require council to implement density targets across the municipality, and estate lots in this location would be more difficult because that means that the municipality would be looking to make up densities in other parts of your urban area. That being said, the location at the intersection of Baseline and Green Road, and of course with the future connection of the GO Transit to the north, this is an ideal location for those types of densities.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Councilor Swart.
Thank you. What kind of accommodation have you made for parking for the townhouse units?
Thank you for the question. It's actually a very good question. We are providing the minimum parking requirements according to the zoning bylaw. That would be 2 parking spaces per unit plus 0.25 spaces for visitors.
Okay, and the range of housing options, do you have any that are affordable to area residents?
That's actually a very good question. The range of housing options include the detached dwellings on the north side of the site, the semi-detached dwellings, which of course are incrementally more affordable, and then the block townhouses, which are certainly a more affordable option in a grade-related development such as this. And then, of course, the next more affordable option would be a stacked townhouse or an apartment unit. So yes, there is a range of affordability on this site.
Have you got any idea about the price point for your townhouses?
I do not know.
Because what's affordable for somebody moving out of Toronto is not really what's affordable for an area resident here.
Yes, that is true. And through you, Mr. Chair, the definition of affordability in the growth plan states that 25% of the development needs to meet the affordability standard, and that's a unit that would be affordable to medium to low income families. And those will certainly be available on this site.
Okay, so was it the intention that Buttonshaw, as it would be an entrance onto Green Road? In other words, it's not going to circle back like the other streets do?
I had the, my engineer and I have had the opportunity, the benefit of working on the subdivision development to the west and learning about the concerns of the residents in the neighborhood, and the servicing requirements led us down the path that Buttonshaw exiting onto Green Road would be the best option. Number one, because it's a required service corridor for the subdivision to the west, but number two, because it would take the traffic from the medium density block and put it all out onto Green Road as opposed to filtering it through the neighborhood. We understood from our consultations with the neighbors in the past that traffic was definitely a concern, and we saw this as the best option to move traffic off of their street.
Did you get any reaction from municipal staff on that through the chair? Or I'm the chair. Any reaction? I just note that, for example, across the other side of Green Road, they all seem to funnel onto Remington, right? So I'm just wondering if this is a new, that seemed to be the plan from what I've seen in this area. So you're sort of departing from that, I guess. Is that something municipal staff has said they agree with or not at this point?
Thank you for the question. It's actually a very good question because we don't have, sorry, to the best of my knowledge at this point, we don't have formal comments on specifically on that exit onto Green Road.
And how wide are the roads that you propose in the condominium part?
That's I actually want to refer to the one of the next items on the agenda. 6.5 meters is what the region is requesting for garbage truck collection. 6.5 meters would be our minimum road width for the condo road, in compliance with.
That's what you've set this up at?
Yes, it is.
Okay, and just to follow up on the questions about the retaining wall. Is it part of the problem, I guess, that you're not allowing a sufficient, I guess, setback to allow more of a natural grade for this land formation? In other words, I take it part of your thinking is you're trying to use up as much of the land as you can for housing units and not to allow a natural slope for the drumlin, hence the retaining wall?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. But, I mean, even if it's condominium that's sort of left with the retaining wall, it still could be a big expense for the condominium, right? If they have to step in and fix it or you know, replace it or whatever.
That's a fair question. What we're proposing is a staggered retaining wall so that it wouldn't be one solid retaining wall, but a retaining wall followed by landscaping and then another retaining wall to primarily to soften the edges, but also to provide a better opportunity to perform maintenance.
Where would all the water end up from that area? Would it end up sort of, have you thought about that, or what's the drainage plan for that?
Certainly, yes. My engineers have thought about that. I haven't reviewed the grading plan in detail, though the water would be, stormwater would be retained on site. Post-Dupree, so that we would be releasing stormwater into the storm sewer at the pre-development rates.
Okay. And is your client also doing the development just to the north there at this point or not?
I'm sorry, just to the north?
Well, SC 2014-002, is that?
No, that's.
Oh, okay, all right.
Someone else.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, so that concludes the public meeting, and Mr. Fry, do you mind just putting your signature on the sheet? Thanks. So that concludes the public meeting. If anyone wishes to, members of the public wishes to stay and watch the rest of the meeting, you're welcome to do that. So I think we have one delegation. Ms. Metcalf, come forward, please. Welcome, Ms. Metcalf.
And staff. On behalf of the Agriculture Advisory Committee of Clarington, we thank you for the opportunity to share our past accomplishments for the year. There's a report on your desks with a more formal and more information in it for you. And so tonight I'll just give you a brief synopsis of our activities. Our committee heard from Miller Waste on anaerobic digestion and waste composting and their partnership with Maryland Farm in Kawartha Lakes. Hydro One told us of incentives to the farming community to help reduce electricity costs. An overview on farmland protection was received from the Ontario Farmland Trust. And we have been part of a number of meetings with conversations with Blackbird and MTO concerning the 407 construction and its impacts and issues on agriculture in Clarington. Folks have shared information with us about broadband, crop protection, hemp and cannabis cultivation, and watershed updates. We met with Durham Regional Police Services, Fire Chief Weir, and MPPs Lindsay Park and David Pacini. Input was also provided to a number of projects, including Durham Climate Change Task Force, Zone Clarington, Farm Connections Legacy Project, Farm Field 911 Numbers, the Emily Project, and the Farmers Festival of Lights, and Clarington Board of Trade's video on agriculture in Clarington. As always, I digress a bit from committee activities to talk about farming, so I want to share with you something about perception versus reality. I have a story you're all familiar with, the story of the three little pigs, and we know how that turns out. Then we have the true story of the three little pigs by A. Wolfe, another version of the same thing, and then we have the three little wolves and the big bad pig. So in farming, as with you folks, there's a perception of how people see us and what we need to do to tell the truths of things. This morning, I had an email come across my desk that said, let's talk about those factory farms and the farming truths in it. So the factory farm phrase has always hit me with a bit of a raw nerve. The term factory farm has been used to describe commercial egg farms such as ours. We have 22,464 chickens that lay close to 22,000 eggs a day. And yes, we are a commercial farm because we sell our eggs, our milk, and our crops off the farm. If you look up the term a factory farm, you'll find statements like animals that are numbered, not named. I challenge anyone to name our 22,464 birds and remember each of them. They also talk about animals that don't eat food, they convert food. And the goal is to raise animals. Well, yes, agriculture, whether it's 25 or 25,000 chickens or 20 or 20,000 rows of lettuce, means you do it efficiently, safely, and quickly. That's how our society has safe, affordable food. According to the dictionary, factory means a building or a set of buildings with facilities for manufacturing. And a farm is defined as an area of land and its buildings used for growing crops and rearing animals. It's interesting how both are very positive, but you put them together in a factory farm, our mindset changed to a negative description. We all know that there's a few bad apples in all businesses, and even though they receive the most attention, they're the minority, and agriculture is no exception. The truth about egg farms is they're family owned. Our farm is a corporation, as are many farms in the country, but 99% of the farms in Canada are incorporated and are also family-owned and operated. We live, work, and play on our farm. Truth is that chickens are well cared for. If not, our farm would be out of business. Truth is, we don't have a luxury lifestyle or go on vacation without relying on other family members to pick up the slack when we're away. Truth is that it takes a lot of science, nutrition, physiology, biology, genetics, microbiology to properly manage and raise those healthy, happy birds. The truth is farmers don't have to name their chickens to really care for them. And the truth is farmers are not unfeeling people that love to send animals to slaughter. We want to feed our community good, nutritious, and safe food. The truth is that egg farming and any farming is our chosen lifestyle, our passion, and we spend 7 days a week working hard to care for our animals and our crops so that consumers can eat those high quality and safe foods. No matter what kind of farmer we are, and we have all kinds of them on our committee, we have crop farmers, dairy farmers, beef farmers, horticultural farmers, We all care about our animals and crops and the world around us, and every day we have to share the truth about farming with everyone we see. Last year during our committee annual review, I challenged each person around the table to stop in and visit at least one farm in the next year to let us share our farming story. I hope you took up that challenge. This year, once again, I challenge you to go to one of the over 130 farms in Clarington. So this shouldn't be too difficult to achieve, to attend one of them and see the true side of farming. Thank you to the municipal staff who join us at our meetings, to Faye, who keeps us informed and organized, and to Amy, who joins us at most of our meetings now too. Thanks to former Councillor Wendy Partner, who was our committee liaison, and welcome to our new committee member, Councillor Mark Swart. Remember, you're all welcome to come out to our meetings on the second Thursday of the month in Room 1C. The Ag Committee of Clarington look forward to working with Clarington Council and staff on any and all rural and farm issues that present themselves in the coming year, and wish you all the best in 2019. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from Council? Mayor Foster.
So you thanked us. Our thanks go your way. That's a lot of eggs, a lot of meals, and I'm sure we've all had any number of your eggs, so thank you for that. You talked about what the committee did. If you had a wish list for what we as council can do for you, what might be some of those things on the wish list?
Continue to support us like you do. It's really refreshing when you go around to other areas and find that, number one, a lot of them don't have an agricultural advisory committee, and a number of them that do don't work as directly with council and staff members, and it makes it more difficult for us when there's motions being passed or recommendations being made at this level that don't come to our table first for some kind of clarification and recommendations. We, you know, like to be the experts on what we do on a farm, just as anyone around here is an expert in what they do or knows what's going on. So that's the number one thing, and you folks have been really good that way, and we thank you for that. Really, that's it. Understand what we do, share with us and what's happening, and we'll share with you the same way.
Okay, and Durham's Ag Committee working effectively, and you feel you're getting the same, the same input there?
For sure. Yes.
Well, so I was expecting a list.
I'll have to start one for next year, so that we have it. We'll take that back to the committee and see what their wish list is.
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't have said that. Thank you, and please take back to the committee. So as much again as you're saying thank you to us, we're really fortunate to have that expertise to lean on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Councillor Hooper.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Ms. Metcalf, for coming forward tonight and for all that you and your organization do for our municipality. There's been a lot of discussion around through the Ag Committee and things like that in regards to broadband service in the area and to supplement the Ag Committee. Is that a big push on from the committee in regards to, would you like to see it improved to 100% or 90% or whatever?
For sure. We rely as all businesses knew we're forced to use the internet or to do business through that way because there is no other option with a lot of things. And when it takes 3 hours to download an upgrade to your Microsoft Office and you phone the company and they say we'll look after it for you and just stay here and phone you and let you know when it's ready, that's an awful thing to have happen, and you time out when you go to do the census and all those type of things. So there's lots of ways to improve. For sure, we need those fiber optics coming so that we're able to access them in the rural area. So it's not just farming, but the rural areas, and it is a push. There's been the broadband study, and a number of agricultural businesses were part of that study, but the study's done, but where does it go from there? And it needs to happen.
Okay, and I can just assure you a little bit that we as a municipality are, as long and with other levels of government too, are working on that. So be patient, that's all I can say.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I just have a question, Ms. Metcalf. Has your committee been engaged with the consultant the region's hired to look at agriculture? I just remember her first name, Bronwyn. I don't remember her last name, but.
That's this week? Okay, our meeting this week is on that. There have been a number, and I myself, as an individual farmer, was part of an initial program meeting with Bronwyn probably a couple months ago. There was half a dozen of us met with her, but it is on our agenda for this coming meeting.
Okay, so what I'm wondering is what is she going to bring, you know, to you that you don't know already, I guess? I'm just curious.
I don't know that she's to bring anything to us. She's looking for answers from us or concerns from us to move forward with things within the region to develop the rural and the agricultural sector.
So she's not bringing information to you?
It's
the other way around?
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because my understanding when I asked about it at the region was kind of the opposite, that she'd be bringing new strategies to you. So anyway, I'm going to try and make it on Thursday because I'm curious what she's going to say.
I think at some point in time, I mean, they're going to bring strategies forward, but they're looking for input from us in order to develop those strategies.
I mean, that was kind of my question was, well, you know, what can she tell you that you don't know already? But anyway.
Well, a lot of people do try to do that to us in agriculture.
Okay, I'll try to make it on Thursday.
Okay, terrific.
I'm curious.
Thank you.
Motion on the delegation. Councillor Hooper?
Motion to receive with thanks.
Okay, seconded by Councillor Jones. Comments or questions? All in favor? That's carried. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we have the St. Mary's minutes. Anybody have a motion on St. Mary's? Okay, Mayor Foster, seconded by Councillor Anderson. Comments or questions to those minutes? St. Mary's Community Relations Committee. I have a couple, so. Councillor Hooper.
I just have one. Who's our representative that sits on there now? Oh, it's you. Okay. That's a good thing.
Oh, I have lots of questions, not answers. Sometimes I hear the opposite. I don't know. Okay, any other comments on that one? Okay, so I've got some questions about the plastics burning. So, you know, I know that we tried to stop that as a municipality, but is this a particularly robust monitoring that's going on with this? Doesn't strike me as, you know, we give the EFW a lot of questions about their monitoring, but I just find this really, how would I put it, skimpy in terms of monitoring here, given what's being burned. So does staff have any comment on that? Is there anything that we can do to try to bulk that up a bit? Because, you know.
Through you, Mr. Chair. There was an amendment to their ECA, their environmental compliance approval, when they introduced the alternative fuels. And the Ministry of Environment does monitor them, and we do get reports on them. If anything, it would be good to get the reports sooner. These are the minutes from September, and they're here in February, March. I would encourage you to ask more questions at the upcoming meeting.
Okay, maybe with your assistance, I'll have a laundry list of questions. Okay. But I guess I'm wondering, like, given what they're burning, post-recycling material, you know, Canada Plastics, Durham Disposal, UPAC, plastics similar to coal and thermal properties. I'm just reading from page 22. Do we not have any monitoring going on for, you know, dioxins and things like that? And do we not have a lot of the same concerns about what's happening at the EFW, I guess, so?
Through you, Mr. Chair, I will reiterate that I am not an air emissions expert. However, it is my understanding that because of the heat that they use to burn at or in the furnace to make the cement at St. Mary's, that in fact the dioxins and furans don't reform in the same way that they do in the stack at the EFW. That is my understanding. You can verify that with MOE.
Okay. Maybe I'll follow up with Mr. Dunn. Okay, thank you very much. All right, so call the question. All in favor? That's carried.
I'm going to declare a conflict on the next item. A member of my family owns property in the interim control bylaw area.
Okay. So noted. All right, so 10.1. Is there anybody have a motion on that, 10.1? Mayor Foster?
Put it on the floor, Mr. Chair.
Okay, anybody seconding that? Councillor Anderson. Okay. Mayor Foster.
Well, thank you, and I think you can hear this from Councillor Hooper as well. Through you to the director, when we're looking at trying to maintain neighborhood character, those houses I would describe in that neighborhood, are more akin to cottages. They're small bungalows on large lots. This is, from what I gather, a two-story structure with apartments in it and slightly larger than what we would allow in terms of lot coverage. I'm struggling with this one a little bit. And do you have a visual as to what this is going to look like?
Pass this to Mr. Pellerin, please.
Through the chair, no, I don't have a visual here. The lot area that you mentioned in the interim control bylaw was reduced from the 40% that was permitted in the R1 zone, which applied to this area prior to the interim control bylaw. So the lot coverage that they're proposing is slightly above the what we'd put as interim control bylaw, but below what the R1 zone previously allowed.
So I suppose the struggle is this complies. I'm reading with small exception, but if we're looking at maintaining the character of the neighborhood, so it will be a two-story structure, correct?
Correct. It will be a two-story structure.
And do we know how many apartments in the two-story structure?
Sorry,
say, do we know how many apartments? Okay. I guess, if I look at the area, I don't know. It feels to me like it's going to stick out like a sore thumb, and then we're caught with if he complies with the rules, if he's playing by the rules, there's an expectation that you get to play by the rules. So help me out here if you can, Mr. Pellerin.
It is a semi-detached dwelling, which means there are two units, one in each half, and each of the semis is proposed to have an apartment within the dwelling. So a total of four units on the lot is what is proposed. I won't disagree with you that this area is made up of a mix of housing forms. Some are small cottages, some are larger. There have been some semi-detached dwellings built in this area. And this, of the three neighborhoods that we're looking at, I'd say is probably the trickiest of the three in terms of identifying a true character for the overall area.
Okay, so if you watch tag team wrestling, I'm gonna knock it over to Councillor Hooper because I'm pretty sure he's got some concerns and questions. Thank you.
I didn't have my hand up, but I know I will put my hand up. Anyways, Thank you. Through you to Mr. Pellerin. I was a little confused today, and we spoke about it, because as I read it, it sounded like to me that there was going to be two units in each one of the semis. So I was thinking that it was going to be like six units or six people living in one side, or six, three in one side and three in the other, which would make six. So now he's clarified that for me. But where in relation on the lot would the actual home be placed? Will it go back? Because if you go back and push it back into the middle of the lot, that's going to be in the neighbor's sort of backyards, correct? Which would be on Brown Street, I think, or Albert Street, whatever it is. I get them all confused down there. Brown Street, sorry. The residents on Brown will have the home sort of in their backyard, whereas it's this, the way it is set up now, it's sort of aligned with, or will it be to the front of the street just exactly like it is now? Or will they push the home back into the lot?
Sorry, I don't have a visual in terms of the location. I expect that the dwelling would be located closer to the minimum front yard setbacks, which would be 6 meters to a garage, and as close as 4 meters to the dwelling, but I don't have, unfortunately, the location sketch to confirm that. They would also need to accommodate three parking spaces in each on each half, two for the main unit and one for the apartment. So each half of 10 Victoria Street would get three parking spaces and two units, so 4 units in total and 6 parking spaces.
So through the chair, so I guess to in order to do that, you would probably have to push it a little deeper into the lot, correct? As opposed to being aligned like it is now?
Not necessarily. Again, a garage could be a parking space, and with outdoor parking spaces, 4.6 meter width, which is in the range of 16 feet, is recognized in our bylaw as accommodating two cars in a driveway, and has been the case in a number of the new subdivisions and other apartments and houses throughout Clarington.
I just have an issue in regards to, we tried to put this neighborhood plan in place so that, and here we go, sort of amending or doing whatever we can to make just do the opposite of what we're trying to do. So I'm just having a hard time with this particular, what they're trying to do here. And you don't have to go very far down the street, around the corner, and head south on Ontario Street to see, something that's gone on that I fear will happen here. So thank you.
So my question to Mr. Pellerin is, did he have an application in for, any type of planning application in with Clarington or the region or whatever at the time the interim control bylaw was passed?
To the chair, no, he did not. This came about afterwards, and is why it's being brought forward as a modification to the interim control bylaw, similar to, there was some exceptions in the interim control bylaw when it was adopted for ones that we knew about. This was purchased just after or shortly after the interim control bylaw was put in place, and there had been some discussion with staff about how they could comply with the interim control bylaw.
See, I thought the point with the interim control